Get the best odds on all the big games this March. Download the Circa Sports Iowa app today.
Hey, everybody. It's the Title IX podcast on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. I'm Steph Copley, and we're joined by Elisa Woods via FaceTime tonight, Jared. Is that right?
Yep.
Hey, Elisa.
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
I'm fab. I'm tired, but I'm fab.
You said no caffeine today?
No caffeine today. I've never been a caffeine person. Well, I was a caffeine person until college, and then college I started to get like heartburn all the time. This is a story that you did not ask for, but I'm giving to you.
What else is new?
And I used to drink just so much Diet Pepsi, and so I stopped, and I stopped getting so much heartburn. So that's been, you know, 3 or 4 years since college.
Just a couple.
More than that. Yep. And so I just decided that with kid number two, I needed some caffeine. And I think that it's making him real grumpy. So we're trying to cut it out again.
And so
that's my story.
Well, we're recording late on Monday night. So if I need to wake you up, just tell me and I'll scream at you. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Jared can see me. So if I start to doze, Jared, just give me a.
Sounds good.
Before we do anything, we need to give a shout out to our sponsors, the Ivy College of Business at Iowa State. Elisa, I had a conversation with Anna Florzak for a Where Are They Now column, and she is a former Ivy College of Business graduate in 2010, and she's actually getting honored this year as one of their outstanding alumna. So
no
I just
way.
Did your shout out for you.
I love it.
But you can still do it for fun. Can you do it?
Hootie-hoo.
Thank you. That was really weak. So thanks to the Ivy College of Business at Iowa State. So we have a pretty packed podcast tonight. Elisa and I wanted to talk about the Zoom call that we did for the high-level Patreon members with Sage Rosenfels. And then, Elisa, I want to talk to you about your two favorite sports, NASCAR and baseball.
Oh, I do love baseball.
And
NASCAR. I could get into it, I think.
Well, I think you could, too. And then you mentioned you want to talk a little bit about the WNBA?
Yeah, I have two different things that I just wanted to touch on. You know, news, sports news.
Yeah, I'm all for the sports news. And then I feel like we have to talk about the last two episodes of The Last Dance before we go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We are doing something new in our podcast. Speaking of the patrons on our... new initiatives, we're going to do a shout out on all of our podcasts, and tonight's Cyclone Fanatic super patron shout out goes to John and Darla Shaban, who we actually saw on the Zoom call. Elisa, you pointed that out.
Yeah, I was like, you said that, and I was like, that name sounds so familiar.
Yeah,
and
we
I was
saw
like,
them
yeah,
there.
I saw them on the Zoom call. That's
so John cool. graduated from Iowa State in 1993, and he actually grew up in a large family of Hawkeye fans in small town Southwest Iowa. I'm sure someone named Jared can relate to that. But as a sophomore in high school, he decided he wanted to go to Iowa State, and he's been a Cyclone ever since. He and his wife decided to become Cyclone Fanatic super patrons because they love the content on the site. They like to be kept up to date on Iowa State news, and they want to support small businesses like Cyclone Fanatic, which is really awesome. So thanks again to John and his wife, Darla, for their support of Cyclone Fanatic. And as a reminder, if you are interested in becoming a premium subscriber, check out all of the incentives, which include shout outs like these, insider information that Chris usually releases Monday mornings, and then the Zoom call we're about to discuss. And you can check it all out at cyclonefanatic.com. So with that, Elisa, you thought the Zoom call was pretty awesome. I did too.
Yeah, I know. I really did. And I got on a little bit late and I then had to leave a little bit early. I had to feed my child and I didn't think that that was the kind of premium content that people were really paying for. So
well, maybe on a different website. I don't know.
So I dipped out a little bit early. But what I did hear was really cool and really interesting. And it was just cool to hear about the season that we don't know if it's going to happen or not. And then it was also really cool to hear about the stuff that Sage does with the team still. And, I mean, he said it himself. Like, he isn't one of the coaches. They have coaches. They have quarterback coaches. But hearing, you know, that he got with Brock to look at NFL tape, that was really interesting. And then he gave a name to the move that I feel like Brock could improve upon, the chuck and duck. I loved that. That's definitely something that I can see him doing in my head when I, like, when I close my eyes, it is the Chuck and Duck. And just talking about, you know, if he can, you know, stop throwing off the back leg when he gets pressure, then he could really do some damage in the NFL. But then also talking about, you know, that he does have the pressure because maybe some weaknesses and the O-line and stuff like that. And I don't know. I just think that Sage had some really insightful thoughts, and it was really cool to have him there. And I'm interested to see what other, you know, Cyclone celebrities that they get for the next upcoming calls.
And I gotta say, I've craved community pretty bad, you know, yeah, during this quarantine. And I know Zoom does not necessarily fix that, but it sure helps from time to time.
Yeah.
And it really did just feel like we were all sitting together just as a group of Cyclone fans, a Cyclone community, which is my favorite part about Cyclone Fanatic. And so it really, you know, satisfied that part of what I've been craving for sure. So I'm looking forward to them. And again, if you're interested in doing it, check it out. It's a $20 a month subscription, and that alone I think was worth it.
Yeah. And I think that one thing that I talked about when we started talking about doing this, when I worked for WHO TV, we would do live chats during sound off. I would just, you know, start a live chat. This has been many moons ago, but I would start a live chat and people would jump on. And more often than not, it was a lot of people from out of town who were watching via, we live streamed the episode as well. But it was people from out of town, and they're like, nobody around here wants to talk about Iowa or Iowa State, you know, and I can jump on this chat and talk to people about Iowa and Iowa State, and I feel like I'm back home again. And I think that that could be a really cool thing too. You know, if you're a listener and you're listening from out of town, and you know, your neighbors across the way don't want to talk about Iowa, Iowa State, they want to talk about, you know, UConn or whatever, Cal Poly, who knows, wherever you live. I just think that getting onto this and starting that community, that's what the Cyclone Fanatic is really about. It's about community. And so I don't know, I think it's cool, and I think it's a cool opportunity that we've given people, and I'm really excited to be a part of it too.
Me too. I agree. It was successful for sure.
Yeah.
And good job, Jared, with the technical, I don't know, what's the word?
Yeah, it wasn't as hard as I expected it to be.
You did a good job.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, Lisa, let's talk about NASCAR, okay?
Do it.
So yesterday was the first time I've ever watched a full NASCAR race start to finish.
And I'm more of a fan than you.
Well, and I've watched them in the past, like just, you know, like turning it on, and then I've walked away. But I've never intentionally watched one. And I did it for a couple different reasons. Obviously, we're around Chris and Connor a lot, and they love to talk about it. Plus, it's just sports and competition, which I'm craving right now, just like everybody. And there was the interesting aspect of other sports watching to see how NASCAR did this and if it was successful trying to adopt whatever mechanisms they had in place. So there's a lot riding on it, you know. But we made it fun. Me and the girls each picked a car before the race started, and we made a bet because I'm, you know, into raising betting girls, I guess.
Because you're Michael Jordan now.
That's right. Just call me MJ.
Degenerate gambler.
That's right. I just want to raise a couple of degenerates. And I asked Corey, who's four, what she wanted to put on the line. And she told me her dance trophy.
Whoa.
I know. It was real. And then I raised it and I said, the winner gets two desserts. So it was intense. It was intense.
Dang, and you got to call me next time. I want two desserts.
Here's the thing. You can just get two desserts.
I mean,
but if you
want
it in our degenerate ways, that's fine.
You know what? I just want to know that I have your desserts in my pocket.
Oh, this is, sorry. I don't know if I just blew your ears out, Lisa. I just talked really loud.
Did no.
I? Okay. All right, that's fair. Next time you can get in on it. But as the race went on, it became clear that Corey's car was not going to beat my car, and she got kind of sad about it. So I let her join on with me, and it turns out we all had two desserts, so everybody won.
Nice.
Yes, we all got a participation trophy. But we had a really good time.
I would have said
really
double
time.
Or nothing.
Yeah, she's four, and I didn't want to ruin it for her. But it was good. I think I enjoyed it a lot, actually. I'll be tuning in. I think there's a race Wednesday that I'll watch. And I think as far as other sports go, it was pretty successful. They were very adamant about their social distancing. There were temperature checkpoints before they could even get in. There were smaller teams allowed. And I think for the most part, it went pretty well. So I'm sure the MLB, NFL, you know, everybody, I'm sure, is watching closely.
Yeah.
Did you tune in at all, Lisa?
Nope.
Okay. Well, there's your recap.
Not even kind of. You know what? We were trying to find the Bundesliga on Bundesliga? Is that how you say it? Anyway, we were trying to find soccer. but we couldn't find it. We looked all over. We looked on ESPN and Fox Sports, and we just couldn't find it. So we didn't get any.
That's your loss.
I know.
Because I'm a big fan now.
I'll watch on Wednesday. Maybe I'll tweet about it on our Title IX Twitter.
Okay. Do you want to double or nothing on desserts?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. It's on the line. Your other favorite sport, baseball. I'm sure you've seen their negotiations for a return to play. And there's two holdups right now. One of them is salary, which is just going to drive me insane, and I'll only talk for a second about it. But my whole position on this is, if you can't come to a one-year temporary agreement during a global pandemic, and you're going to be greedy about it, whichever side you're on, it's going to really be hard for me to come back next year or whenever things return to normal and be just jolly about returning.
Yeah.
But the other
side... I just want to know, are you team owner or team player, though?
I don't really care. I just think there needs... Figure it out. Figure it out. Are you team owner or are you team player?
I'm team player. These billionaire owners are being not nice people, I think. You have plenty of money, and you're just mad you're going to get a little bit of a pay cut, and so you're making everyone else take a pay cut because you're going to take one pay cut after making millions upon billions every year.
But they're not making money right now.
They don't need to make money. They're billionaires.
Well, so are the players. You know what I mean? I mean, I could flip it around. Yeah.
But the owners have a lot more money than the players. Like, the difference between, like 20 million and a billion is substantial.
Jared, what do you want to say?
I mean, if we're going to talk about who's standing to lose more money this year, I mean... If you lose half your contract, half of your $20 million contract, you still make $10 million. The teams are losing like $200 million just on gate revenue. Probably more.
And my sticking point is none of this is, well, at least as far as I understand, none of this is going to, they're talking about a temporary, like, let's just put this Band-Aid on during the pandemic just to make it work for everybody. It's not like a salary cap issue they're trying to sneak in, as far as I understand.
The only problem is I think their CBA is up after this year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can understand where you don't want to give up negotiating leverage.
Yeah, I think the owners are using this as a opportunity, and I don't think anyone should be using a pandemic as an opportunity.
Yeah, that's fair. And I appreciate that part of it. I mean, the truth is I just want baseball.
True.
The other part of it is the safety, which, I mean, we all agree that we don't want anybody to go back unless it's safe. I get it. But so Ken Rosenthal tweeted out the part of the 67-page agreement that's come out about how they have to, the measures that need to be in place to make this work. And I don't know. I read it and my anxiety spiked. There's just so much. I mean, it's no spitting, no exchanging of lineup cards. You're changing the baseball anytime multiple players and touch it. You're spreading the players.
Don't they do that anyway? They go like through hundreds of baseballs.
They do go
a
through,
day.
Yeah. So it's like thousands. You're spreading out the dugout, so only essential players in the dugout, and then they're putting the other players in the stands. And all of this is fine, but it was just a reminder of the crazy amount of measures that need to be in place to make this work, and it made my head hurt.
Have you guys ever heard about the baseball shortage that they had?
Actually?
Yeah, like last year.
There weren't enough baseballs?
Well, there was, just barely. There were like minor league teams. So they get their balls like from, you know, minor league baseball, major league baseball, whoever, like they have some deal, I think it's with Rawlings. But there were minor league teams that ended the season with like two boxes of a dozen baseballs left.
Like total.
That's it. Whoa.
Well, we're gonna have, well, I guess the good news is we're probably not gonna have minor league baseball as far in terms of the baseball shortage.
But that's why they, you know, there's a theory that they, because they changed the balls.
Yeah.
That and the balls flew more.
Yes. Mm. Oh, we know about
and
this.
Yeah, this is a whole deal. But then there was the theory that they changed them back for the postseason, and it was because they didn't have enough baseballs, so they had to. They had to go back to the old ones so that they could get back to using, so they would have enough to get all the way through the playoffs.
That's really depressing, actually. Figure it out. If you're going to do this conspiracy, do it right.
Well, I mean, it's just one of those things where I would think that people would probably notice it more. But there's so many things in there, too, like the licking your fingers.
Yeah.
Pitchers are already talking about how they're talking about how they're going to enforce the putting things on the ball rule a lot more. I don't know if you guys heard about the Angels clubhouse guy that was selling, what, I can't remember what they call it. There's some sort of substance that he would be selling to players, to pitchers on opposing teams. And apparently this happens everywhere, that they could put on their hands and then could put on the ball. And it makes it so you can grip the ball better, which they do rub those balls down. But when you pull a brand new baseball out, even if it's been rubbed down, it's still going to be slick.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I would like to know that the guy who's going to throw it 102 miles an hour
has a little grip.
He has a pretty good feel for his grip with a baseball and isn't in any way questioning whether or not he can hold the ball as well as he needs to. And that's where all the pitchers are like, they're like, I mean, we don't do it to load up the ball.
Right.
We do it because we don't want to kill someone.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be weird. And I think I want baseball to happen more than anything. But it's just, I think I need to accept the fact that it's not going to look like baseball as we knew it, but that's just the case with anything. There's just so much that has to go into this to make it work, and I'm growing more and more disheartened, I guess, at every time I think about, you know, every time I think we take one step forward, I see something that makes me think we took three steps back, so I just don't know. I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out soon enough, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with, like, payment and coming out to play, I would wonder if now in their next CBA there will be some sort of how did they not have rules in there already about if the season was shortened? Baseball is like the one sport that they've literally quit in the middle of the year.
I wonder if they did. I wonder if this is just one of those act of God scenarios that was in the I don't know. I haven't. That's actually a really interesting question. Now I'm gonna go look.
Why wouldn't they prorate the contract? I mean, I don't care what the players say.
Right.
If you're paid to play, if your contract is written for you to play 162 games and you're only going to play 80, then how does it make any sense for you to get paid what you would make to play 160?
I agree with you completely.
I mean, it's just like the NBA players. It's like NBA players aren't, you're not playing basketball.
You're not doing your job, so.
But it's not their, you know, in fairness, in that one, it's not their choice to not play baseball or play basketball right now. So, like, it's a little bit different in that sense. But it's like, if I was a baseball owner, I'd be like, y'all aren't, your contract is for 162 games. It's not for 80. Like,
right.
We got to figure out a way to prorate these things.
Well, and that's why I get frustrated because it, and I understand that the amount of money we're talking here is more than I can even imagine. And I get why there's greed on both sides. I get why there's frustration on both sides. But I side with Chris pretty strongly on this. I'm sure you've heard him talk about how there's a moral obligation to return to sports. I absolutely agree with that. I think, and I appreciate why people don't, but this is your job. You get paid millions of dollars to play a sport that is for our entertainment. And there's something to be said about what that entertainment value brings to society. And I just feel like the safety stuff aside, which that is completely valid and we need to make sure that's safe. But the money part of it, guys, figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, too, you look at baseball. I mean, how many guys really are making enough money that it's like, oh, we've got to prorate this contract because, you know, if you only make $2 million a year, then okay, we'll probably be able to figure out how to make that work. But if you make 30 and to play 100, so then all of a sudden you're making whatever.
Per pitch.
Yeah, almost $500,000 a game. Yeah. Like, that's insane. And that's where it's like, maybe if they could figure out some way to say, okay, we'll pay you this for this year.
Right.
But then we will tack some of that money onto the future years of your deal and, like, space it out to where it's like, basically we'll have a bunch of Bobby Bonilla situations.
And that's tricky too, because how do you figure out one player from the other? And, you know, are there tiers? I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's got to reach like a certain point.
Right.
Where it's like, this would be a ridiculous amount of money for this many games.
I just know that, like I said, I mean, it comes down to this for me. If you can't get it figured out for just a short one season deal, I'm going to be pissed off. And I know I'm a loyal baseball fan. If I'm pissed off, people who don't really care aren't coming back.
Also say, if you don't want to come back and play by now, then how bad do you want to play anyway?
Right.
Like, if I was an owner, I'd be like,
I have a couple things to say.
What?
Can I butt in here?
Yeah, sorry.
So I think that something great would be if all of the owners paid for all of the players the players will take the pay cut, but all of the owners will pay an insurance. So if one of the players gets the virus and they aren't able to play or something, then they have this insurance covered. And if the owners aren't willing to do that, then that means to me that they don't think that it's safe. And all of this, like, I want sports more than anybody, but I also, like, a good friend of mine's grandpa just died. And a really good family friend of ours just got the virus. And it's like, this shit's real. And if these players are afraid that they're going to get it, or, you know, they have to spend, how long is the season going to be? 2-3 months. They have to spend those 2 or 3 months in one city. You know, they all end up playing in one city, and they have to spend their whole time there. They have to be away from their family for that long. And the owners sit in their house quarantined with no risk, absolutely no risk, staying at home with their families. Like, I think that there is a little bit of like a risk reward thing here, and I think that we're understating the risk that the players are taking by going back out there and playing for our entertainment.
I don't think eliminating it is feasible if in terms of a return. I mean, people are going to get sick, period. That's just the way it is until we figure out a treatment or a vaccine. And that's going to happen regardless of whether we have sports or not. People are just going to keep getting sick because people still have to live. And so I tend to err on the side of, if you don't want to play because you're freaked out by it, you don't have to play. But if you do want to come back and you're willing to accept the risk, you also need to accept the fact that you're playing a shortened season and don't deserve the entirety of your contract. But I understand that you should probably, maybe there needs to be something built in to appreciate that risk.
Yeah.
And at that point, I would say that too, that people who do come back and play should not be, you know, derided as scabs or anything like that. People who are crossing some sort of picket line. Like,
right.
That's not,
right.
Not really what it is.
Yo, I totally agree with that too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Even if we can find a treatment though too, it's mm-hmm. like people still get sick. We just can't know how to treat them better.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of variables to play. But this is where I think like basketball would be the easier one to figure out, just because there's fewer teams. It's going to be they could play the entire NBA playoffs in probably 3 weeks if they really wanted to like cook through it, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think that should be the first one that gets it figured out, because it seems like the one that would be the logistically easiest one to do.
Yeah, I do think initially I thought baseball would be the easier one logistically, but after seeing that 67 page document, I think you're right, which is crazy, but I don't care. Just bring something back, for the love of God.
I was reading about what that WNBA wants to do, and the commissioner was just talking about, like, and it's kind of compared to the NBA. They share a lot of the same resources, like the medical experts and everything like that. But she did say they probably wouldn't play in the same city or the same venue. But they did say they were looking at playing possibly just at one site, the whole season at one site. And I talked to somebody who works in professional soccer, and he said that that was an option for them too. That, you know, that was something that they had talked about as well. And that's tough for their families. You know, they, especially just some of the guys who don't maybe make as much money. It's an easier blow if you're making a couple million, to take 2 months away from your family, than it is if you're in the WNBA and making, you know, not quite as much. But I mean, this year the WNBA was going to take most of July and early August off for the Olympics anyway. So they were going to have a shortened season anyway. They were scheduled to start May 15th. I mean, I feel like they would possibly be the easiest ones to get a season in. You know, testing is vital. The commissioner said that we have to have testing figured out. We have to be able to test if we want to, you know, willy-nilly. Whoever wants to test can get one.
And is the that WNBA, a technical term, willy-nilly?
Willy-nilly. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what she said. No, that she's seems, way seems more right. professional.
We do have best testing in the world.
Anyway.
But yeah, I think that they could start playing. They could, they're going to start paying the players June 1st, which is, I think, when their first paycheck was supposed to come, and they're paying them as expected. But there's still, like, salary talks with the union. So nothing is for sure yet, but it sounds like everyone's getting their full paycheck on June 1st, even though they're not starting to play. And a lot of the teams also have cut down to like 12 or 15 players. And they were saying, you know, if they could get down to 12 players per team, it would be a lot easier. So they're deep into it, deep into trying to figure it out.
And I guess I will say, I'm going to stop being a negative Nancy and be positive Patty for 2 seconds. I guess it's good that we're all talking. I mean, it's better than a month ago when it kind of felt like everything was at a total standstill. And at this point, we've seen documents that suggest proposals. And even if that's not ultimately, you know, what we go with or what these leagues go with, at least there's people trying and putting pen to paper and putting plans in place. And that's a start, because this isn't going away anytime soon, or at least, you know, I don't think it is. I hope it is, but I don't think it is. So as long as we're moving forward and having these discussions, we're, you know, that's better than we were. So there's my positive take. You're welcome.
I think the direness of the situation is starting to become more and more real to the everybody.
Monetarily.
I mean, especially, especially like, I mean, if I'm an owner, I would say to a player, and it's not trying to like push him into doing things, it's just being real. You know, take for instance, Giannis Antetokounmpo, the guy who owns the Milwaukee Bucks said, yo, man, I know you've talked about possibly going to the Warriors, or there's the rumors you're going to go to the Warriors. Well, if you want to make $35 million from the Warriors in 2 years when your contract's up, we probably better figure out a way to play, because the salary cap is going to be drastically impacted. That's going to drop max contracts. That's going to make it to where every team has to, I mean, it would completely shift the entire balance of the league financially to where it's like, you don't have a place to play and make $30 million playing basketball. You don't have a place to play and for $30 million playing baseball. That's, to me right now, it's like, you want to play? Like, do you want to make all this money in the future? Well, we got to figure out a way to play now.
And that's a great point, because what is happening now is going to impact these leagues for
a long time.
And especially, and the longer this goes, the longer it will last. So, I mean, that's obvious, but, you know, I think the changes that we're seeing now are obviously temporary changes, but some of the health factors may not change for a long time. There may be fans who are scared for years to come, and all of that's going to affect the bottom line. So it's amazing how money motivates, you know? Elisa, before we take a break, was there anything else you wanted to mention about the WNBA?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think that it would just be really cool to, you know, get them in an arena. It'd be really cool to get them in our arena, but I don't know if Iowa's ready for it, but I think it'd be cool. You know, I've been talking to people that I work with, and we have some really cool stuff figured out, and like just the seating, you know, seating groups of people 6 feet away from other people. My coworker was working on something, you know, like that, and I sat in on a webinar about, you know, mitigating risks within the arena. And I think arenas are ahead of the game here more than we think. So I think that there's possibilities, and I think it'd be cool if we got it here, but I also think it'd be cool if I could sit on my couch and watch it somewhere too. I want everybody to get it figured out, and I want risk to be zero. I know that that's not possible, but I just want risk to be the same as if we were all chilling at home.
Well, I hope
hanging with our 10
soon.
People.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we can talk about The Last Dance really quick. How's that sound?
Great.
Okay. Okay, so last night, Sunday night, we had the last two episodes of The Last Dance, and obviously everybody watched, everybody's talking about it. I just wanted to know what your maybe top three favorite moments were, Alisa and Jared, because I have a couple that I want to talk about.
Of the whole thing, or
no,
of just last
well,
night?
Well, I guess it doesn't... Mine were of last night.
Yeah.
One of mine, which this kind of is last night, and the whole thing is the iPad reactions.
Yes.
They were just so
Agreed.
Damn good.
Agreed.
I could have... I saw this a couple of times on Twitter, and I totally agree. I could have watched him do that for an hour straight and never gotten bored. He was so salty. It was really
oh my
entertaining.
Gosh.
Steve Kerr, I thought, was a highlight of...
Yes.
What a gem. Let's just protect him at all costs.
Right. I mean, like, after he talked about his dad, and then they cut to him, like, sitting there during the national anthem, I was like, oh, you got me here. You got me.
He got me, too. He's just one of those people that has a soft... He's soft-spoken, but what he speaks carries a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Which I think is a rarity now.
Yeah.
And then my other top three was... I was thinking about, well, the pizza, the food poisoning, which
right.
was just bizarre, by the way.
Right.
We can talk about it in a minute. But I had a weird thought about it. And we've always known it as the flu game. And I was thinking about it of in today's world. So the flu game doesn't happen now. If the flu game happens in 2020, Michael's not playing. And if
right.
he does play and doesn't tell anybody and we find out later that he had these symptoms, we think he's the most irresponsible human on the planet.
Right.
And I just thought about how until this year, I always thought it was so heroic of him to come out and play with the flu. And now I'm like, that's
right.
disgusting. How dare you? And it's just amazing how my perspective has completely shifted on that.
Like, think about Fred Hoiberg when this all was starting, how he was like... showing flu symptoms basically
on the bench
and we were
when he was coaching.
yeah
during the Big Ten tournament, right?
Yeah. And we were all just like, oh my gosh, this is a bad look.
I thought Fred was gonna die.
Yeah, that was terrible.
I was in Kansas City like, dude, Fred's about to die.
He looked hell.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like hell. And it turns out it was just
like influenza B or something,
right? Just
yeah.
your everyday flu, which we've all been there, and we've all, you know, we've all gone to work not feeling great. But when you think about, I mean, during the show last night, he's so sweaty, just disgusting, just sweat coming out of every pore. And think of if he had had the flu and not this fake food poisoning that he talked about, how many
right.
germs he spread. So I just, that was a weird perspective shift for me.
Yeah. I heard somebody talk about that. Like, how would the pizza place know that it was Michael Jordan that they were bringing a pizza to?
There's a guy
you
who called
into
Dan Patrick today.
I heard this.
Who said that his best friend was the one who ran the pizza place and delivered the pizza to Michael, and that it was only him. He said there was not five people there.
Wow.
I think that whole thing's made up.
Yeah.
He made up the whole thing.
I mean, he made up so many other things just to get himself motivated. Why
right.
not the pizza gate?
Right.
Yeah, can I zag on you guys here for a second?
Zig and zag.
My favorite part of last night was that it was over. Honestly.
Why?
Well,
I thought you liked it.
No, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it, you know. But as it went on more and more every week, I started to dread watching it. And I would pay less and less attention while it was on. And it wasn't because it wasn't good. It is because I have soured on Michael Jordan as a human being so incredibly much that I couldn't stand it.
Like, through this, you've
mm-hmm.
soured on him,
you mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. We all knew he was, you know.
The greatest.
We all knew
whatever.
He was a great basketball player. We all knew, too, that, like, it's no secret that Michael Jordan was an asshole. That's not, we didn't need 10 hours of a documentary to tell us that. What was mm-hmm. so disappointing to me, and I think it's something that if Michael gets an opportunity, maybe not today, but in the future, to look back at the way that this was handled, I would like to think that unless Michael is just completely unself-aware, he will regret this. He will not like this as well.
I think he's just
yeah.
unself-aware.
But
well, or he's extremely self-aware and he's okay with it.
This to me felt like 10 hours of Michael getting an opportunity to tell everybody again how great he was and to get his last word on everybody.
But that's just how
yeah.
he is.
But that's fine. But if I was a former player and I saw the way that I was portrayed and the way Michael Jordan treated me in this thing, Why would I ever agree to do anything ever again? Why would Gary Payton agree to ever be in another documentary? Why would Isaiah Thomas ever agree to be in another documentary? John Stockton, whoever. And that's why so many people said no.
Have we seen what Scotty's had to say?
Scotty's pissed too.
I'd be pissed if I was Scotty. I think they portrayed him, unfavorably, and then they tried to rehab it a little bit, and then they'd portray him unfavorably. And then at the end, I thought it worked out. But there were moments I was like, Scotty, you're a B, you know?
Do you guys think...
And I don't think that's true.
Do you think that Michael Jordan in 2020 has a true, genuine friend that is his friend because he is not Michael Jordan?
I actually wondered about that. I think that was it Gus, the security guard?
Yeah.
I think relationships like that were genuine, but those were more of like a father-son than a true friendship. I was wondering about the same thing.
Because I just think you can tell from the way his teammates talk about him, it still seems like none of them really like him. You know, they're probably grateful of the fact that they got to be around him and it put them in a position to be more successful. But it's like, I looked at all these different things and you see how many people he has just derided for so long. Patrick Ewing's like, I don't need to watch that. Michael's told me every day for my entire life how much he's beat me.
Yeah.
You know, like no one likes Michael. And I think that there's going to be a time where, you know, Michael's going to look back at his life and be like, man, I burned every bridge by being an ass. And then I went and threw more gas on the fire with a 10-hour documentary in the middle of a global pandemic. And that to me is like, I mean, you look at Kobe, like, and I don't want to make it a comparison thing, but as soon as Kobe got out of the game, he made it about growing the game more. Michael Jordan has not grown the game in the 20 years since Michael Jordan's career ended.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, that, and then he just goes back and craps all over his era by taking a dump on all the great players, the other great players.
This is fascinating too, because you were on Twitter just saying like, bring it. Like, we need it early. I mean,
yeah, as a documentary, it was awesome. But it just, to me, that was... It was just really disappointing.
So you appreciated the documentary, but you're just disappointed at the way that you feel about Michael Jordan as a person. Mm-hmm. Now. That's fair. I think that's completely fair. I think I would agree with that. I'm impressed by the way the guy's he's an assassin. I mean, he is just killer instinct. He will win at all costs. And there are very few people in the world that are like that. And he's one of them. And for better or for worse, I mean, you can criticize how he did it, but that guy was going to win. And he was going to find a way to win. And I think that part of it is admirable. I think the way that he, like you said, is probably a very lonely human now is unfortunate.
And it's just, I think that he was put on the world to do one thing, and that was be a stone cold killer on the basketball floor.
Yeah, and he did it.
And you know what? Like, if that was all that matters to him, then that's perfectly fine. But I think that you can see with his lack of success as a general manager and as an owner in the NBA that being an asshole doesn't work all the time when all of a sudden you've got to be able to schmooze up to people.
Right.
And even he's made a ton of money with the Jordan brand. Michael Jordan's not in there designing shoes, you know? So it's like he's made a ton of money off being Michael Jordan.
Right.
And I respect the hell out of that. I wish I could make a ton of money off being a Jared Stansberry.
Yeah.
But that to me is just...
You will. Someday you will.
Your day is coming, Jared.
But it's just... I have a hard time sitting and calling Michael a business mogul.
Right.
No, Michael signed a huge endorsement deal that turned into one of the biggest brands in the entire world, and it's him. He is the brand. Michael didn't do anything besides be a great basketball player. And now he's turned that into being a mediocre owner and a horrible NBA GM.
What were you going to say?
And he got in with Nike before they were Nike. I mean, before they were mega.
Yeah. And he didn't even want to take the meeting.
Which is wild.
His mom made him.
Yeah, his mom made him. Good for you, mom. Yeah, yes. The one moment, maybe the...
People will not like me for that because they'll just say that I hate Michael. But I just think I respect the hell out of him as a player. Like, he's still the greatest of all time. But I just have a hard time with that.
I do think it matters to him a little bit because there was that moment. I forget which episode it was. And it was between... Let me think about this. 9, 7, and 8, maybe, when he got choked up about how he rides people until, you know, or, you know, whether he's perceived as a kind human or whatever. And he got choked up. It was basically the only time, with the exception of talking about his dad, that he got showed any emotion whatsoever. So it makes me wonder if it actually does bother him more than he lets on. I don't know.
But was it that it it bothered because he tried to justify it to himself, but I wanted them to have the success with me. And I was like, okay, I get that, but like,
at what cost?
Yeah. At what cost? Because I would be interested to know, and this is the kind of thing that I wish had been asked, and maybe nobody would have answered the question. When's the last time Scottie Pippen talked to Michael Jordan?
Right.
When's the last time Steve Kerr really sat down and talked to Michael Jordan?
Well,
Bill Winnington.
And my question last night after Steve Kerr's, Lisa, you mentioned this too, after he's talking about his dad, and they say, did you ever talk to Michael about it? I was like, and he said, no. I'm like, what do you mean you didn't talk to Michael about it? Your dads were both murdered. How is that not something you ever discussed? Like, that's...
I don't think they knew him as a person at all.
But that's what I'm saying. That is shocking to me.
It's not to me, because I just...
Well, it's shocking to me only because I share everything with everybody.
I just don't think he could... I truly believe that he cannot relate to anyone.
Because he's a Stone Cold Assassin.
Yeah, and that's what makes him so bad in business, is that he's just like... He looks at everybody as being... He looks at it like, I'm going to do everything I can to kill this person, when at the end of the day, like...
That's not always
the effective way of doing that. If I was a player, I would never want to play for Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, clearly he figured out how to win on the court, and that didn't necessarily translate in business, but I don't know. I mean, I'm sad.
And this all came...
Go ahead, Elisa.
No, this all came on the tail of, like, his speech at Kobe's funeral, too. And... Like, that speech made him look like such a human, you know, and such, like, a caring human and somebody who had real connections with people. And then, I don't know, it just seems like a different person that was there for this, for the documentary. Because I came off of Kobe's funeral just loving Jordan. Like, oh my gosh, their relationship was so, like... genuine. And then it's like, okay, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was just business.
I'm sure it was. I mean, maybe he's just a lot better at being genuine when he's not in front of the camera, you know?
Or maybe I don't know.
But I think that there's a reason that when Kobe got out of the NBA, his, like, as a human being, approval rating was basically unanimous of everybody loved him. I don't think hardly anybody liked Michael when he left the NBA. It's probably one of those things where they're like, thank goodness he's gone, you know? And not just because now we can finally win. Michael could have came back and played in the NBA. No one wanted him to come back.
I think there are people who want to be liked, and there are people who want to be successful. Maybe not everybody wants to be liked. I want to be liked, so it's hard for... It's a novel concept for me. But... Maybe that's not what he's living for. And it's tough for me to say that because, like, okay, now you're, like, also gambling and you have a gambling issue and you have all these other issues and, you know, like, all of his personal issues. Okay, maybe there's, you know, something that you need to work out. But maybe there's just people who don't want to be liked and that's not their, like, main goal.
Yeah.
He's made a lot of money.
I wish I wanted to be liked less.
Yeah, me too, Elisa. Jared, will you like us less?
No, I want you to like me.
If I'm told to change the settings on the loopback anymore, I might not like you guys as much.
We had some technical problems before we started the podcast, and Jared was about ready to stab me, and he's about ready to throw his computer with Elisa on it. So, whatever, Jared. You love us. Okay, last question I have before we sign off for the night. If you could pick another athlete or team to have a 10-episode documentary about, who would it be?
Somebody posted this.
Yeah. Honestly, Elisa, this is something we shared. I forget what, you know, if it was in a text or in our Facebook Messenger or Instagram Messenger or one of the 17 ways we talk to each other every day. But mine might be the 1999 U.S. Women's National World Cup team.
Which they're going to have a documentary, aren't they?
Yeah, they're...
Isn't that who the Netflix documentary is about?
Yeah, so that's what you sent me. Netflix is going to do, I think, a movie about them. But I did some research into it, and they're being very vague, and I don't know if they're being intentionally secretive or if it's just that early, in the early stages. But, Elisa, we should tweet that.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, we'll do that.
So here are my thoughts. Here are my people. Tiger Woods.
Yeah, Tiger Woods is on there.
Lance Armstrong.
He gets two parts. Starting this
like weekend. I want to hear Serena Williams. I want to hear about the greatest of the greatest of their sports. You know what I mean? Like, Tiger Woods, like, I want to hear about his relationship with his dad. I want to hear about the infidelity. I want to hear from his wife, ex-wife. You know, like, I want to hear all the dirty details. I want to hear from the doctor holding the needle, you know, sticking the needle in Lance Armstrong's butt, you know? Like, I want these dirty details of the just shady things that go down to win.
What would yours be, Jared?
I think the unfortunate reality is that there's not that many subjects or teams or eras that are, one, interesting enough, and two, have enough figures to make it worth 10 hours.
Okay,
like, so Tiger's story could be long.
Yeah.
And it could have a lot of pieces. But I don't know you could fill that much time with just Tiger.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think it has to be something that is very prolonged. Like, the one that came to my mind was, and I know there would be people who would criticize me for saying this, but I do, if you could truly get people to be honest and tell real stories, I truly believe a documentary about Nebraska football from like 1983 or probably like the year when they lost to Miami in the Orange Bowl, where they tried to go for two until Tom Osborne retired, would be absolutely fascinating. You had you had a Heisman Trophy winner. You had a couple guys who probably should have won the Heisman. You had one guy who is now dead because he was killed in prison and at that time had beat up his girlfriend. You had a lot of guys who were getting hit with domestic assault and things like that. There are so many stories about that era that are untold. And they were cheating their asses off with, you know, doing steroids and all that kind of stuff. I think that if you could get people to be honest, then it could make for a great story, but you're never going to.
That's the key with any of it. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, people are so self-aware now. They will never be honest to what's truly happening. I mean, you
can't blame them either.
I think a perfect example is what Michael told about the food poisoning.
Right.
Because I still do not believe that to be true.
Yeah, that was just strange. Elisa, I'm sure that you noticed they're doing the 30 for 30 on Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire that's getting released on my birthday. So... happy birthday.
I went to a Cardinals game. I was on a band trip, and I went to a Cardinals game, and Mark McGwire was supposed to play, and he ended up not playing that game. And I just, like, so vividly remember being so insanely disappointed, and I was literally the top row of, like, the third base side. So, I mean, he might as well have been playing. I could barely see. But... oh, gosh.
Well, now you can relive it on my birthday.
I know. I will.
Okay, good.
I want to watch a 10-part documentary called Redemption, the Scott Drew story.
Okay, you and Chris can watch that together.
10 parts. His taking over the Baylor program, couldn't play a non-conference schedule. Just a program absolutely in ruins after an NCAA scandal. The death of the murder of a player by another player leads him to the Elite Eight, turns him into one of the true powerhouses of college basketball in the Midwest, potentially on the verge of winning a national championship in 2020 before a global pandemic curbs it all. You know? Mm-hmm. Scott Drew just cannot catch a break. It's always, the world is always against Scott Drew.
That needs to be on the bottom of the poster.
There we go.
It's done. Oh, we always think of the best ideas. We really do. All right.
We have this documentary about OJ. Isn't the 30 for 30 about OJ super long?
Yeah, it's 7 hours.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know because I still haven't watched it yet. Sorry.
We have time.
That one is, that one's pretty heavy.
It was pretty heavy.
So, see, we kind of have other sports stars.
It also covers like 40 years of time, so
right,
jeez.
Yeah
there's a lot. Well, that the Celtics and Lakers one's like 5 hours.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, there are some out there that it's like you can but it's got to be something that has a lot of key people who are A, still alive,
right,
and B, would like to talk.
It's got to have some legs.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know it would be tough to do a 10-hour documentary about Murderers Row, 1929 New York Yankees.
Well, they're all dead, so.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It would be hard to do that documentary for 10 hours.
It would be. Elisa, okay. To everybody listening, Title IX, Betsy DeVos released some updated rules for Title IX, and I was going to talk about it tonight, but it's 10 o'clock, and I'm tired, and my brain cells are already fried. I mean, I'm at the point where the only thing I can watch on TV right now is, like, The Real Housewives, because I'm just so wiped out. I can't talk about it right now. So if people want to talk about it, tweet at us, and maybe we'll do it for the next episode. I'm not being irresponsible. I'm just wiped out.
No, I'm with you, and I wanted to talk about Phyllis George dying, and I don't have it in me either, and I don't think my cell phone has it in me. I just got the 10% warning.
Okay, well, that's a sign. So, let's just be done.
Yeah. Slide into our DMs if you want to talk about this stuff.
If you're really interested in it and want us to talk about it, we'll talk about it next time. Anything else, guys?
Both show.
All right. Well, Elisa, hopefully we'll see you in a couple weeks in person, but if not, this works too.
It works, but yes, I'm hoping to see you in person.
All right. Well, in the meantime, go Cyclones.
Go State.